Hello everyone and welcome back to the Donkey's Garage for Season 2, Episode 22, Racing at Spa-Francorchamps. This is in Belgium. This was a very special race to me because it was the first race I attended in a long time, a Formula 1 race that is. It's a track which is relatively nearby where I live. It's just a 2-hour ride. Absolutely a beautiful location. It's one of the most spectacular, I think, tracks out there. And also, it's very special because I went with a friend of mine to watch the race. We had an absolutely blast of a Sunday watching the cars in real life. I have to say that the experience in terms of watching, in terms of what you can actually follow up on the race is not as good as watching it on TV. I have to be honest about it, because when you are on the track, of course they have put in the recent years massive screens so that fans, people attending the race can follow the race with the helicopter shots as you see on TV. But at the end of the day, you are among a huge crowd, some locations that are not so ideal to watch the race. So you do feel like you're watching the race partially. You don't have the commentary on the back that tells you what's happening and so on. You may miss the pit stops. You may miss some of the action that's happening here or there. So one thing that I was reminded of, if I can put it this way, was that you attend the race for the experience, because I mean it's absolutely thrilling to see those cars rushing down, for instance, Camel Straight, and then they just break into the comms at 3:27 with more or less 3:27 K an hour when the DRS is open, and then they break in about 100 meters all the way down to third gear, just take the curve, just plunge the car in, and then they just go towards Bruxelles and then the Double Gauche. So it's quite amazing to see those cars in real life. I think they are not as exciting as past generations were. I remember the first race I attended was, I think it was 2006 or 2007. I would say it was 2007 it was 2006 because Alonso was still in Renault in blue, wearing blue. Yes, 2006. It was the first race I attended with my dad. He was a big fan of Formula One, and he knew the track by heart. I mean, he knew where to place himself in order to have the best view on the track and so on. He lived for the sport, and we sat, I remember, in the Double Gauche. It was raining like hell. I remember the experience and telling myself when I was a kid, oh my gosh, why am I soaking wet? If I could be at home dry, you know, at the end of the day. But yeah, I mean, at the end, I guess it's something that you grow to enjoy being at the trackside. And back then I remember the feeling of those beasts coming down towards the Double Gauche. The sound, it was penetrating sound. It was like somebody playing a trumpet on your ear. It was about to be, it did actually hurt your ears. Whereas now the engine seemed to be a bit milder, substantially milder, I would say. Yes, they're loud, but they're not as loud as they used to be. They're not as dramatic as they used to be. And the gear shifts, they don't make you feel the same kind of, but if they don't have these the power to kind of cause these butterflies in your stomach of you know, knowing that something humongous, something that is almost not from Earth is approaching. because the V8s of the time, the V10s of the time, they were downshifting and they were breaking, they were absolutely shattering your ears. And they could go from eighth gear to third gear to second gear in a matter of a second, but the sound coming out of it was mind-blowing. And now the downshifts, they feel much more normal in terms of the engine noise. It's much more average. It's you could probably an Aventador, a Lamborghini Aventador downshifting is much more dramatic in that sense than an F1 these days. I don't know if I am actually conveying what I'm trying to say. So yeah, I mean, absolutely amazing experience. I do recommend it. I remember Maria once when she attended the Australian GP. She was so excited, and well, I was lucky to attend this year myself an event, and I will definitely be going back soon, because yeah, I mean, as a sports fan, I just enjoy the atmosphere. You see things that, I don't know, make you nostalgic. If you've lived the good years, I saw this guy wearing the blue Renault jacket from 2000, well, blazer jacket or pullover, whatever you want to call it, from 2006, with the Alonso. It was Alonso's colors back in the day. There were so many tifosis, so many Ferrari flags still being wavered. There were actually so many McLaren merchandising being on track, and also the nice shops they set up around the track with a lot of merchandising that you can buy. You can actually have an outlet with old merchandising that you can buy, which also will make you feel nostalgic when you see the old Ferrari t-shirts or the old Williams, BMW, stuff like that, Sauber. It's very, very, I don't know, it's a very enjoyable experience. With that said, some background recap I would like to do is some things that happened in between Hungary and the race, the actual race in Spa, which first of all was the, I think, hilarious scene at the Hungarian Grand Prix ceremony, which was when Norris shattered into pieces Max trophies, because he opened the champagne bottle by smashing the bottle against the actual podium, and by doing so it threw over the edge Max trophy and it broke it into different pieces. And well, I mean, there was some tension out of it, some comments that I think were unnecessary overall. They Max's face at the end of the day, he was a bit like, oh, what happened? And Lando reacted like nothing had happened, and first he joked, and then people were like, oh, but you're being disrespectful of Hungarian tradition or culture, because this is a work piece of art and you broke it and so on. And then at the press conference in Belgium, he had to apologize for what happened, which I'm not entirely sure what the whole mess is about, because I mean, yes, he was a bit of a hooligan, he broke it, but I mean, at the end of the day, it's something between him and Max. It's not something to make a whole scene about. He then had to apologize publicly and of course say that he didn't mean any disrespect towards the Hungarian people, blah, blah, blah. I mean, I think it's just unnecessary, but in this day and age where everything is taken as an offense, I guess it makes sense. Also to say, it's quite a worthy trophy. It's about 50, 60,000 euros. It's porcelain, beautiful porcelain actually. Chinese porcelain, beautiful, beautiful. And yeah, I guess Max will get a new one at the end of the day. Also, in more interesting in the more interesting side, a massive reshuffle in Alpine, in the French team, where they have announced that the team principal, Zaffenhauer, Alain Permain and Pat Fry are out. And this means that the team principal, I mean, I'm not a big fan of him, although, I mean, credits to him, he's been able to lead, especially the pink Mercedes team back in the days, Force India, with relative limited resources to rather successful results. So I think that's a very positive aspect or something positive of his management, something that he should be proud of. Now, having said that, I would say that he doesn't actually qualify as a leader which leads a team to success. And this brings me to a quote that I am very much fond of, which is by Napoleon, the first emperor of the French, who said, "If you lead 100 dogs, if you lead 100 lions by a dog, the lions will die like dogs. However, if you lead 100 dogs by a lion, you will be certain they will die in the battlefield as lions." So I think this means overall that the leader means or has a very substantial impact on how the attitude of the team, the attitude of the whole group is defined. And I'm not saying Zaffenhauer here is a Otmar, is a bad leader, but he's not a lion. If I think of other team principals, I would imagine people like John Todd, I would imagine people like Ross Brawn, I would imagine people like Toto Wolff, Christian Horner, people who are absolute lions in their own right, and they will bite your head off, and they won't look back. They know what they have to do in order to bring their team to success, and they will just accept it as it is. And even Helmut Marko, even Niki Lauda, I mean, they are people that have been characterized as ruthless sometimes. Yes, they have been ruthless in their decisions, but at the end of the day, management is not about being nice and being politically correct, but about bringing results. And bringing results very often demands exceptionally difficult choices to be made. And sometimes you have to choose between worse and bad and evil. And the choice is there, you have to make it, but the only moral standard I think you should have in mind at that point is the interest of the team, not so much the interest of the individual, which of course you will have to consider it, but cannot dictate your mind at that point. And in any team, no individual is actually, well, essential. You can do without almost everyone. I would say without everyone. You just have to find a replacement. And happily, I would say there are so many people out there that are talented that can replace you relatively quickly. That's why, in a world which is so competitive as everyone, and I would say any field whatsoever, you have to give 100% of what you have, 150%, 200% of what you have, in order to stay always ahead of your competitors and make sure that you prevail over the others. And I think this is something that you see both in team principals, in engineers, and you see in drivers. The drivers that stay in Formula One are the ones that do give 200%. They give their lives to the sports. And I'm not saying those who are not successful, it's not that they are not given 100% of what they have, but they might not be giving as much as they should. I mean, I'm thinking of people like Lewis, people like George, people like Michael Schumacher, Senna, they Alonso, they are absolutely crazy about the sport. They will look at every detail. Vettel was known for that. Also, I mean, they will look at every chart possible, every single detail of the car in order to improve it. They will not accept a job halfway through as a done job. They will want to verify that every stone has been turned and that all the possibilities have been exhausted. And this team principal, Otmar, I think sometimes lacks this hunger for victory. He is very good at managing with limited resources, but at the end of the day, you need somebody who is willing to really say, I don't want to do it with limited resources. I want to do it with whatever resources needed, but I want to win no matter what. And I think these actually inscribes into Alpine's philosophy, which has been, I think, still for a while, which is something that was actually mentioned by Alonso when he left Alpine, saying it's a team which is lacking the hunger for victory, in terms of they work for the best results with the limited resources they have, but they don't work for victory, and that's the difference. They are trying to maximize their resources and do as best as they can, but they're not aiming to do for victory, for absolute victory. And I think in that sense, that's where Otmar is a dog and not a lion in the social hierarchy. The other two individuals who left the team, Alan Pearman and Pat Fry, I'm not very acquainted with their work. I know that Alan Pearman is certainly a very, very successful engineer, and Pat Fry is certainly one of the most successful engineers also in Formula One. But I'm not exactly sure why they have left the team. I know that overall it's a decision taken by Rossi, which is the CEO of Alpine. And I guess they felt that the team was not achieving the objectives they had set themselves for 2023. It's relatively soon. It's relatively unexpected, given that it's mid-season. Certainly a reshuffle halfway through the season is something that you would want. At the end of the day, it disrupts the workflow and so on. But I guess the management was certain that they needed to get ahead of the season and try to put in place the management, or new management rather, as soon as possible before they would go any further. With that, Bruno Famin is the one taking over as team principal, and I would imagine they will bring some other people to replace all the two other positions that have been left vacant in the meantime. I also heard a comment by former F1 driver Alain Prost, which was a bit critical with regards to Alpine's management, especially Rossi, who we know that he has some issues with regard, especially following the way he was dismissed in 2019. I guess this is the world of Formula One. It's a very competitive world. And no, it seems that no gifts, no friends are really made. No one is really a brother in arms. It's just you're just part of it, of a machinery. And as I said, no one is essential to any team. And well, you can relatively be easily replaced. On that note, I am now going to follow this section with the actual commentary on the race, which I hope will give you some insight. It's already almost a week since the race, so I'm just going to give a brief overview of the race and some of the highlights as opposed to an actual detailed account of what happened, as I usually do. So here we go. So, the weekend of Spa was a sprint weekend. It was one of these weekends where you have two races that kind of run In parallel, you've got the ordinary weekend with your nice qualifying now on Friday and the nice long race on Sunday. On Saturday instead, you have a sprint, a shootout qualifying, the qualifying towards the sprint race, and then you have the actual sprint race, which is just somewhat limited in time, in laps, which by being shorter, it's meant to incentivize overtakes, risk, and so on. So the weekend from free practice on Thursday, it looked like it was going to be a very difficult weekend with showers. Actually, Friday was insane. It was raining like hell. I remember watching the free practice and then the sprint, and I was at home and saying, oh my gosh, on Sunday I am going to die if it rains that heavily. But luckily for me, it didn't rain actually on Sunday, as I will mention later. So the sprint qualifying, it was Max, Oscar, Carlos, Charles, Lando, Pierre, Lewis, Perez, Ocon, Russell, with Stroll at the back, which I will then mention. I will mention it right away. Actually, he gambled on the qualifying for the sprint race by switching too early to a slick compound, and he then lost it right after Bruxelles, going towards the Double Gorge. He left his car against the wall with no options whatsoever. Bringing a red flag, which ruined also Alonso's chances because he was still on the pits. So, I mean, he was on his outlap, but by the time there was only 30 seconds left to the session, so there was no chance, I think, that for Alonso to make a lap time. So at the end of the day, the session was cut a bit short. But anyway, during the sprint race, I mean, it was quite an ordinary race. Nothing major happened except with one exception, the clash between Lewis and Perez, which then led to Perez's retirement. They were at Blanchimont at the back and they touched each other. Lewis presumably going against Perez and then kind of snatching some of the batch boards, the right-hand side of the batch board of Perez, and causing a substantial loss in performance, and then he just had to retire. Stroll during qualifying had a pretty ugly qualifying, and then Alonso himself during the race, he made a mistake at the Double Gorge as he was trying to overtake, Kevin Magnussen, one of the two Haases, and he went over the curb and he lost it with no real damage because, I mean, he was quite a clean exit, but he just got beached, and then, that was the end of the race for him. I think he only did 4 or 5 laps. Otherwise, Max won the sprint, followed by Oscar in second place, then Pierre, which was really good news for the Alpine team. Finishing P3 for the first time actually this season, very good news for them. Sainz, Leclerc, Norris, Lewis, George, Ocon, and Ricciardo. And of course, very good news also for Ricciardo because, I mean, his first race, his second race, and now he was bringing some, I mean, not points because for the sprint race, the top 10 are not given points out of the top 3, but still good news for him to be on the top 10. And then during the actual race, as I say, the qualifying was on Friday as opposed to Saturday. And it was very mixed conditions, also very difficult, I would say, overall. But, I mean, they did do quite a good result overall for most drivers, I guess. It was the day that actually mattered, because the actual race that really gives you points and you really should work towards is Sunday. So Max qualified P1, followed by Leclerc, Sergio, Lewis, Carlos, Oscar, Lando, George, Alonso, Lance, and Tsunoda. I have to say two things here. Max actually got a five grid penalty for changing gearbox, which dropped him to P6 on the actual grid. And then the two unexpected, I'd say, surprises was Alonso and Lance Stroll with an Aston Martin that suffers from top speed drag, and yet they were able to kind of invite themselves to Q3, which, I mean, overall it's not bad news. Alonso did say that the weekend was looking very, very difficult for them, but as the weekend actually progressed, they actually found a bit more pace, and as I will mention in a second, actually the race went really well for Aston Martin at the end of the day. So positive news. I have actually to make a parenthesis here with regards to this team, because there has been some speculation as to what has caused the fall in performance, the situation they found themselves at. And last video, I did mention that they were losing the development rate, which is, of course, essential. And it's something that Mike Crack has stressed. We are not bringing enough updates, and Alonso has mentioned it, and so many other people have mentioned it. Even Motorsport magazine have mentioned it. I mean, everyone is aware of this. But there is also an aspect that perhaps should be put out there, which is during an interview, Mike Crack was being asked about some of the updates that Aston Martin brought and that have not been retained for the season. And one of them was with regards to some parts that were declared not fit by the FIA. And so Mike Crack didn't actually confirm or deny these accusations or this statement. But the fact is that apparently or presumably one could imagine that some of the aspects that were giving some of the updates that were giving Aston Martin such a good performance at the beginning of the season were then reviewed by the FIA and were deemed not to be in line with the actual guidelines. So that's something out there to put. I would guess that we're not going to know the truth about it, because especially when these things are solved or are agreed on the back rooms with the FIA, nothing is really published about it. The teams accept in the shadows an agreed solution with the FIA. They don't publish, they don't really tell much information, but it's something that perhaps it's relevant, and perhaps we'll know in the future if something was of this kind was actually true. Now, during the race, as I said, I didn't actually watch much of the race because we were placed in Camel Straight more or less at the middle of Camel Straight, and then we moved towards the Le Comte at the braking zone. Beautiful place to be, but you only see a tiny portion of it. But otherwise, Max Verstappen won the race with an incredible management coming from P6, and by turn lap 2 he was already P4. Then he had no trouble overtaking the guys ahead of him, namely Lewis, Charles and Perez. He overtook Perez, I think, relatively easily. He came out of the pits in the first pits stint with no trouble whatsoever, and then just smashed through him with no pressure, and ended up leading the race by about 30 seconds. So an absolute domination by Max, then followed by Perez, who, I mean, found some of his being again. I guess he's found some of his performance back, but still, I mean, he's very far away from Max. So good news for the team because they stacked 1-2, but at the end of the day, Perez, I guess he's not as happy as he would like to be because he's not there fighting with Max as such. Then followed by Charles, who did a mild weekend. The tire management in the team is getting better. He was able to contain Lewis, which is something relatively important. Lewis was actually getting closer, especially during the period where it started kind of spittering some rain. Charles actually did lose some performance. I actually have to say that Charles seems to be far less comfortable in rainy conditions and wet conditions, slippery conditions than Carlos Sainz. Which, I mean, it's something strange because we usually say that the good drivers, the excellent drivers, the outstanding drivers, the legendary drivers are those who find themselves most comfortable in rainy conditions, in slippery conditions, in difficult conditions, as Senna is, as Senna was, as Lewis is, as I would say, I don't know, of recent drivers, Alonso is, and so on. But Charles is just not there. There are two possibilities to that, and that is either the car is very difficult to drive, it is being put over and over, very unpredictable, and so if you put slippery conditions plus a very unpredictable car, you have the insane combination which is doomed to fail. And also, it could be that he's just not the driver he is claimed to be. And I say this because actually the other day I was listening to Lobato in Soy Motor in on YouTube. Sorry. So I was listening to Lobato in Soy Motor on YouTube, and he said he didn't actually see the greatness that has been claimed Charles is so far. I mean, he's a good driver, but hasn't actually been outstanding or as outstanding as he's been put to be. And I have to say, I mean, I was really fond of Charles Leclerc, especially at the beginning during his F2 season, during his first season in Formula 1, absolutely stunning. But it is true that in the last two seasons, he's been very, very average. And I would say that actually Carlos Sainz has outperformed him overall. And that makes me wonder why Ferrari seems to be so keen in keeping Charles as the sacred driver within the team when he hasn't shown so far to be what the status is being awarded. I mean, he's not Schumacher, he's not Alonso, he's not Vettel, he's not Kimi. He hasn't brought that much to the team so far. He's brought relative success, but no more than Carlos has or any other driver. Even Massa has had more success in Ferrari during his tenure than Charles so far. So very, very mixed feelings in that regard. Then the question is, what happened with Sainz? Because he was starting fifth, and I just mentioned Charles, but I didn't mention Sainz. So what happened is that in the first corner, in Spa, the off the grid, Max was P6. Leclerc had a perfect start. Alonso had a very, very good start, also aided by the bit of chaos in turn one. And then you had Leclerc and Sergio, which were Leclerc then moved towards the right hand side to cover a bit Sergio. Then you had Lewis, and then you had Carlos, and then you had Oscar. And then Lewis went on the outside, and Carlos was going to go behind Lewis, and then found a small gap inside Lewis, and then dipped for it, actually blocked his left front tire, dipped for it, and then as he was right on the apex of the actual corner, he found himself to be sandwiched between Piastri and Lewis, because Piastri had actually dived like crazy on the inside of Carlos Sainz, trying to make the inside and then have the runoff. But I mean, it was quite a desperate attempt, I would say. It was a good idea, but it was quite a desperate attempt. And Carlos said on the radio, "Hey, I don't understand what this guy is doing," because if he's watched any races in the past 10 years, he will know that no driver who has attempted that has come out successfully. And I would say he's very much right. Piastri was, I think, overly zealous in trying to make a pass where there wasn't really room for it, and indeed history shows that specific place to make a pass in spot is very difficult. You're very likely to bump with a car that is actually taking the nice all-terrain racing line. Not so much in the inside, because he was literally over the curb, just millimeters away from the actual wall. With that said, I actually understand the alternative view, which is Piastri, which was saying Sainz was on the outer line following Lewis, and out of the blue, he decides to dive for the inside. And as he does that, he actually blocks the tire because he's finding himself is too quick to make the entry to the turn, and then forgets that I'm already in the inside. Yeah, I mean, that's if you watch the video, that could be an argument, that could be one way to put it. But in terms of where the cars are placed, Piastri's car is actually not even halfway through Carlos at the time of the collision, which means that Carlos had committed himself far earlier to that racing line than Piastri had. So that makes me conclude that Piastri committed to the racing line he chose on the inside of the first turn far later than he thinks he did. And by the time, or at the time when he was about to commit to that racing line, he should have realized at that very specific moment that Carlos Sainz had already taken the domination of that space, had taken already that gap, and that it was practically impossible to really make a dive for it. That's my interpretation. I would say that Carlos Sainz was not at fault, and it was actually seen by the stewards as a racing incident, so no one was at fault. The result of that collision was that Lewis was intact. He didn't get hit by any other car. Carlos had a massive hole in his side pod, which at the beginning they considered was going to be a 5% loss in performance, in aero performance. And at the end of the day, after 26 laps, they decided to retire because, I mean, he was just losing positions. He was literally just working towards the back at a rate which was almost unbearable, and at the same time he was just putting on mileage on an engine that, I mean, could be saved for further use. And Oscar Piastri actually broke the wishbone on the steering wheel within the first turn, and then so as I said, he broke his wishbone and then tried to make the first lap and then realized that he had to retire within the first lap. Quite unfortunate, because he actually did have some pace during the weekend, as opposed to his teammate Lando Norris, which seemed to be quite on the fence the whole weekend, just not feeling the whole car, just a bit, I think, outshined by his teammate, at least in Belgium. I mean, it's just a reality how close Oscar is to Lando Norris, and he's actually outperformed Lando during the sprint race, and during the race he was looking very, very sharp, very, very ahead looking very, very solid, and again able to outperform his teammate. Then fourth came Lewis, followed by Alonso, who had a bit of a momentum there. Lewis was leading Alonso by about 25 seconds, I would say 6 laps to go to the end. Lewis pitted for a new set of tyres in order to go for the fastest lap of the race. And then when he came out, he was just 3 seconds ahead of Alonso. And Alonso realized it and said, "Oh my gosh, I could have an opportunity to fight Lewis." And then picked up the pace and got a bit closer. But then actually Lewis just was able to really put some distance again, and they finished as 8 seconds apart. But it was an interesting move by Alonso. Again, it shows how he understands the race. He was managing tyres, he was managing probably fuel and so on. But then as soon as he saw an opportunity to get closer to Lewis, he was able to really pick up the pace. And now with regards to Alonso himself, I have to say that it was quite a formidable race for him. Starting P9 on the grid, had a blast of a start, placed himself right at the right place at the right moment on the first corner of the race. He was able to avoid all the clashes, especially between Carlos Sainz and Oscar Piastri, and as he went up to the old source and then Ryan De Jong, he was able to overtake quickly the two McLarens. He was able just to fly by and settle for peace. Let me make any mistakes. I would say P6. Then he overtook Carlos, and then quickly he settled for 5, and that's where he stayed for the rest of the race. He was followed towards the end of the race by George Russell, who was at a striking distance of about 6 seconds. George himself did, I think, a relatively good race also, coming from P8 to finishing P6. He was able to, I think, manage the people behind him at the end of the day, especially Lando and Ocon, which were really, really close, with Stroll just a tad behind. And then Tsunoda, who did an amazing race, finishing P10, and Gasly finishing P11. I guess it felt like a bit of a disappointment for Gasly, knowing that on the sprint race he actually finished P3. But at the end of the day, this pack between 6 and 10, they were really, really close and quite interesting to watch. Also, Stroll did have some pace, also as Alonso did, which gave the Astons an opportunity to really fight, I think, with the other cars. Lando Norris, the McLaren, was a bit losing a bit of spice here, as opposed to especially the previous race or Silverstone, which were looking absolutely out of the blue, looking very, very sharp. It had to do also with the setup, because McLaren had predicted that it was going to rain, so they had opted for a setup which was more oriented towards rainy conditions. At the end of the day, it didn't really rain; it was just some drops of water, but nothing significant. So they did run in dry conditions. So at the end of the day, they sacrificed a bit of top speed for the sake of downforce, which was not the right bet at the end of the day. Overall, not the most interesting race. Again, it follows, I think, Hungary, which was quite a boring race, with Spa being also, again, quite a boring race, except for a few spots here and there. But overall, I mean, Max, absolute domination. And then the top 4, 2, 3, 4, and 5, they stay more or less the whole race where they were at, with the action happening at P6, P7, P8, P9, even P10. They were fighting, really good race, as I said, by Tsunoda, who was able to kind of storm through the field and really have a good strategy and come out relatively well. Not much more to say. I'm actually suffering from allergies suddenly, so I am going to finish here. Thank you very much for listening. I was absolutely delighted to attend the race. I was mind blown, and quite a formidable experience. I recommend it to anyone who loves Formula One, who lives the passion as I do, or so many other people do. It's a great experience. And on that note, thank you, Rafa, again for joining me in this incredible experience. And thank you to everyone for listening and for following the podcast. It's having a very good year, very successful year in terms of listens. So keep doing it, and I will keep bringing updates. Now we have a 2 weeks break, and then next is Monza, which I'm sure will bring quite a lot of enjoyment and passion from the tifosis. So on that note, have a good day, and I will talk to you soon. Thank you very much. And as always, don't forget to subscribe, leave a comment, and share it on social media. Thank you very much, and bye.